Blog Talk Radio.
With Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. It's an absolutely gorgeous day here in New York City. Matter of fact, I probably should have taken my little computer, my laptop, gone out on my back porch and done this show. Oh, but alas, I am sitting comfortably, though, in my office here. I had come back from a trip in Michigan that was, more than just artsy. And that's where what we'll basically be talking about. Michigan is now like one of the tourist places to go to. And so, just in terms of art, though, our first stop was in Detroit, and one of the places we went to was the Detroit Institute of Arts. So we're going to have Pamela talk to us, kind of give us a tour of the museum, and we're going to have Pure Michigan. It's they're called. Michelle is going to come on and talk about Michigan in general and this thing called Art Prize. And then we also have, we're going to go back to Detroit again for a company called D-Hive, and they do tours. And so Jeanette will be on to give us a tour of Detroit. And so... And then I also... Yes. Okay. All right. All right. Thank you. Marilyn and Minerva were on the trip. And they obviously, they're not going to chat, but in case I forget something, they're here to remind me. But my sponsor. Let me get one of my sponsors in, and then we'll get ready for the show. It's food. Well, this was like arts and eating, so. Here we go.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo Dark Belgian Chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale.
Yes, and you can get these brownies, of course, at www.brownies.com. Getting in a new batch. Taste testing ones that are not brownies. One is a lemon bar kind of thing, and the other is... crumb, like cinnamon crumb kind of thing. And I'll let you know. I'm a chocoholic, so I'll let you know what I think. In the meantime, so we're ready for the show. And so now going to introduce Pamela. Are you there?
I am here.
Did you drool? The brownies. Did you hear the brownies?
Oh, my gosh, yes. In fact, I just finished lunch. I'd love a brownie and a cup of coffee right about now.
Me too. Me too. The brownies are coming at the end of the week.
Oh, okay. Well, wish I could jump through the phone, but anyway, Merle, I'm so happy to be here, and it was very nice meeting you on your trip to Detroit.
That's some great museum. I said a great in both sides too.
Yes,
it's one of those places that. It's hard to take in one day, or you could take it in one day and not look at every single thing.
Right, exactly.
To get a sense of it. So what I want to do is we're going to kind of like take a tour of it, and I want to first talk about what's in that the main hall that. I don't know what you, it's the mural, is that what you would call it?
Yes, yes. Well, when you walk in the grand entrance in the original 1927 building off of Woodward Avenue, you walk into the Great Hall, and that houses our suits of arms and armor, and we have a really excellent collection of that. If you keep going, what you're mentioning is what we refer to as the Rivera Court. And these house four walls of frescoes by Mexican muralist Diego Rivera. And he painted these in 1932 and 1933 in what used to be a garden court. So it used to be a place with a fountain and some plants. And the architect at the time who did made just a beautiful building really didn't want art on the walls. He wanted to be more contemplative. But Edsel Ford and William Valentiner, who was the director at the time, commissioned Rivera to do murals on two of the walls at first, and it just had to be about industry in Detroit. So Rivera and Frida Kahlo, who many people might know, she's also an artist and she was married to Rivera, she was here with him, and they traveled to the Ford River Rouge plant, which is a suburb of Detroit. And he was just fascinated by the state-of-the-art machinery, and at that time it was indeed state-of-the-art. So he decided to do the murals of the Detroit Ford River Rouge plant, and he named the murals Detroit Industry. Now, as you know, when you saw these, it's really difficult to describe on an internet broadcast.
Sure.
But people really need to come and see these murals because they're just astounding. It took him 9 months to do, and he has a lot of different themes. There's a lot of his Mexican heritage depicted in the way he depicts one of the stamping machines. Is it looks like a robot to us, but it's based on an Aztec god. And then he also has a production line of workers, and they're all ethnicities and races working together, and that's in reality not how it was. You know, the blacks got the worst jobs in the foundry, but Diego Rivera, who was a Marxist, painted his ideal world of workers all working together with equal pay and, you know, equal opportunities. There are many other themes in the murals, and we actually have an iPad tour if you're here on site, but that tour is also available on our website, which is dia.org.
Oh.
And your listeners, if they go there, they can also see black and white footage of Rivera painting the murals, which is really interesting. So
That'll
give them whet their appetite for their Detroit visit, which
sure.
I'm sure after this show, everyone will be just dying to come to Detroit.
Well, how many, because I couldn't do all the walking and whatever. How many
No,
floors?
Of course not.
How
well,
many
there
floors?
Are actually there
are
three
floors?
Yes, we have about 600,000 square feet in the museum. We have around 6,000 objects on view at any given time, and our collection is about 60,000. We have a lot of other highlights. People might not realize that back in the 20s and 30s, the collecting, the getting was good, so to speak. So a lot of the European masters that you can't even find on the art market today were available. And some of the more well-known artists like Van Gogh and Monet, they were almost contemporary artists at that time because they worked in the late 1800s and in the early 20th century as well. So we have actually four paintings by Vincent Van Gogh, and one of them was the first Van Gogh painting ever acquired by a U.S. public museum, and that's a self-portrait. And we also have the first Matisse, which we got in 1922, and it was painted in 1916. And it also happens to be one of the very important works of art in the canon of art history as well. So we have great European art. We have a wonderful collection of American art, landscapes, portraits, and kind of like the whole history of American art, very deep collection. And one
Let
thing
me
too that
I just want to ask you a question. So
please.
when people are going, and let's say they see, you know, Van Gogh, and they say,
mm-hmm.
"Well, but I saw Van Gogh in another museum someplace." How do they, you know, like who owns this one? Is it a replica, or do various art museums like vie for getting original paintings? Is that what happens?
Well, actually, every single work of art in here is original. We don't have any reproductions. So anytime you see a Van Gogh at another museum, Van Gogh had a terrific output of paintings and drawings, actually. So everything in the DIA and most other museums, I'm sure every museum of this category, all the works of art are original. So if you see some Van Goghs, even in the Van Gogh Museum, you won't see the ones in Detroit there because they're all different. So,
well, I guess what I'm asking, how would your museum, would it be something like somebody says, you know, I think we need a Van Gogh here, or is there somebody out there that says, I think we'll see if we could sell them a Van Gogh? How does that work in terms of
Well, if you're really, really lucky, like we have been, you'll get the works donated. We have the postman, Roulin, is one of our Van Goghs, and that was donated by Josephine Ford. So, and her bequest, she donated several pieces of art, some Picassos as well. So, you know, museums get works of art by people donating them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the curator's jobs is caring for the collection, but also developing kind of like plugging holes in their particular collection of what we don't have. So they're always scanning the market to see, oh, if we need a work by, I don't know, Monet for this period, you know, let's see what's out there. It's not a good example because you probably won't find many Monets on the market.
Right.
But you know, just to tell the story and to put things in context. So, that's another way.
Okay.
We buy them at auction. We buy them from dealers.
Oh, okay. Is it ever like some art museum goes out of business and everybody says, let's get the art? Does that ever happen?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I'm not
curator
or I don't know. That would be very unusual, I would presume. And then again, you know, when you have works of art that are donated, the donors might say, sorry, you can't sell this, or, you know, if you sell this, it's going to revert back to the family, or who knows, you know. That's not all of them, but there are some works that the donors have restrictions on them.
Okay, so I'm assuming, like most museums, there are two mm-hmm. types. There's one that's a collection and then one that's called an exhibit.
Yeah, we have special exhibitions. Yes, absolutely. We happen to have a lot of prints and photographs in our collection. So we will, two or three times a year, we'll have a special exhibition, but it's completely composed of our own works of art. Like, so we'll have photographs, Detroit photographs, or we have one coming up in October of European photographers, but they're all works in our collection. And when there are things, any artwork on paper, like a photograph or a drawing or a print, they can only be out for maybe 3 to 4 months at a time, and then they have to go back into storage for several years because they're very fragile. So we can rotate things in and out a lot, so that's why we're able to have such good print and photography exhibitions. But we also have special exhibitions, which are sometimes organized by other museums. Like we have this Watch Me Move, the animation show, which is a complete history of animation. That's opening here October 6th, and it's going to be great. It has, you know, the old Steamboat Willie from Mickey Mouse and all the way up to a lot of the Pixar things. So it's really, it's not your Saturday afternoon cartoon show at all. It is really like the art of animation and the history and how it's changed and adapted through, you know, political and social changes as well. So when we also have the oldest continuous film theater in the United States, the Detroit Film Theater, and we're going to have a lot of programs and movies related to this exhibition. So that's going to be really, really fun as well.
Oh, that's great. So
yeah.
Let's go into, I guess, the collections. Let's kind of like, you know, not sort of like go into one room, another room. What can one expect to see in terms of collections?
Okay. Well, we have about 6,000 works on view at any given time. And the murals I talked about are probably like the heart of the museum. And then our modern collection, like I said, Van Gogh, and we have Renoirs and Rodin and any of the superstars of art, pretty much we have them. One of the things that we're considered an encyclopedic museum, meaning that we have art from all cultures and all time periods. And we're the only such museum that has a dedicated department for African-American art. And we have a suite of galleries that kind of go through the evolution of art by African-Americans, including contemporary art. But then we also, in our American galleries, which is American art, say, before around 1950, we have 19th century art by African-Americans who were working and making their living with white artists at the time. And a lot of people don't realize that, but there's some great masterworks in those galleries as well. So that's interesting. And we have a great African collection that was actually started by Eleanor Ford in the 60s, a really large Native American collection. We have works from Canada and then pre-Columbian work from Peru and Mexico. We also, in, I believe it was 2009, we opened a suite of galleries for Islamic art because Detroit has, the Detroit metro area has the largest Middle Eastern or Islamic population outside of the Middle East. So that gallery is really beautiful. It's got beautiful ceramics and carpets and Qurans and all kind of exciting artworks. And then we have contemporary art. We have, you know, abstract art. We have pop art, like by Andy Warhol. And we have...
Let me ask you a question. So, like,
sure.
With the pop art, like at Andy Warhol. Now,
yeah.
I had gone to, I think it was in an Andy Warhol museum, I believe.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Let's see.
There is one,
Pittsburgh?
Yep.
Was that Pittsburgh?
I think so. It's on the East Coast. I can't remember exactly.
Okay, I think it was Pittsburgh. So in terms of, like, with that, when you're getting that, you're not, like, getting it from that place. You're getting it from somebody who's, like, donated that piece.
Correct. We have a restricted funds for buying art because, you know, if a museum sells art, then they can only use that money to purchase more art. So basically when they take something out of the collection, it might be because they don't need it to tell whatever story they're telling, or it might not be of that good of quality. Someone might have donated it and we took it, but we don't really need it. So for, you know, something like if you wanted to get a Warhol, you would just go on the market and look and see, you know, who's selling a Warhol and then purchase that. So a lot of the works were, you know, just outright purchases.
And the other question I wanted to ask you, I saw that sign, the Rosa Parks Boulevard sign.
Yeah.
Now,
that
was purchased from the Heidelberg Project?
You know, it
was they donated
The artist is Tyree Guyton, and he is the person who is basically the Heidelberg Project. He's the artist
right.
who lives on Heidelberg, and that's his artwork. I don't know if he donated that or if we purchased it. I could find that out for you, but I'm not really sure. But it is
okay.
the same artist, yes.
Oh, okay. I was kind of wondering. It's like when I saw that, I went, that looks familiar.
Yeah, I know. And so you got to visit the Heidelberg Street, huh?
Yeah.
Isn't it great?
I'm going to go read the sign. Yep, it is.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I just looked it up, and we did buy that. Yep.
It was recognized. I don't recognize much art. I mean, like, I can, like, a Picasso.
Right.
I could tell Picasso. I could tell Chagall. Because
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like the Jewish Picasso, as I kind of see it.
Yeah, kind of.
And I can usually like maybe Van Gogh, Monet, some of them. But basically,
yeah.
other than that, I really,
yeah.
you know.
Right.
Well, okay. Oh, Andy Warhol. Yeah, that's
yep.
true. So it's not a lot of, you know, like, so when I'm looking at art, it's not even... it's not the painter or anything. It's just like, is it satiating my eyes? That's how
right.
I kind of look at it versus,
yeah.
you know, who the painter is or anything
right.
like that.
Right.
Do you tend to have, and just, would people expect your museum to have artists that people know who they are?
Yeah. Well, you
okay,
know, we have both. Yeah. I mean, we have probably, you know, it depends how much you know about art. When I started here, I knew absolutely nothing about art. I, like you and like most of our visitors, you know what you like. You know, you look at what is appealing to your eye or maybe something's thought-provoking. And I learned things, of course, about the collection through my job here. But
right.
One of the great things about the DIA, and we're actually on one of the leaders in this area, is we really have purposely, well, we actually reinstalled all our art when we were doing renovations in 2007, and we purposely reinstalled all the art to make it much more friendly, visitor-friendly, to the non-art a scholar or historian or people who are even knowledgeable, because we did a lot of research, and, you know, museums are for people. They used to be for people who knew their way around, and they could, you know, the people who were more educated in art history, even though those aren't the people who attended museums. Well, 99% of our visitors don't know art history, and they know that they like to look at art, and most people come to a museum and they want to learn something, but they don't want to feel like they're in school or they're being taught to. So we rewrote all of the labels to make them much more, to facilitate people making personal connections with the art. So we'll have some themes of travel or dining, you know, in, like things that people can relate to in their everyday lives, even though, you know, the way they did it in 18th century France is different than we do it today. But it's the human condition, and art, and artists reflect, you know, what's going on in society. And, you know, we try to answer the questions for our visitors of, you know, why is this object here? Who was it made for? You know, why was it made? And our labels don't talk about the art in art historical terms, like the different movements, you know, like classicism or Baroque art, because people, you know, that's not that meaningful. But instead we'll say something like, how can you identify a work of art by Peter Paul Rubens, for example? And then it talks
right.
about, you know, certain colors or certain shapes or certain vibrancy or whatever, and it gets your eye to kind of think about those things and look at the art again and kind of notice different details. And we'll even have labels that have like a reproduction of the work of art, and it'll call out certain elements. So if it's about a mythological story that people aren't familiar with, it'll say, oh, well, you know, this guy is so-and-so, and this is the story behind that. And it just makes it much more interesting when you understand the context, the cultural context, and the historical context. So that's what we've done. And we've been actually, I think it was the Wall Street Journal years ago that called us the most visitor-friendly museum in the United States. So
really?
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you noticed that when you were here. You know, we have signs. We even have these I Spy games
yeah,
for kids in the gallery.
I forgot about it. I have
yeah.
to I forgot to put that in my blog about the eyes.
Yeah, oh, that's okay. But, you know, it's things to keep them engaged and to looking back at the art.
Yeah,
and
explain
then, you know,
what that is, so, the eye spot.
Oh, well, it's a little, it's they're mounted on the walls. They're not in every gallery, but they're scattered throughout. And they're mounted lower, so they're more eye level for children. And it says, I spy. And then it gives a little bit of a clue. It might say, I'm white and, you know, a lady wears me on her ear. So, you know, it's an earring. And so the kids will look around for a picture of an earring. And if they can't find it, then you lift up this flap and it'll show the picture of the earring. And so they like, okay, they, you know, it's mostly the younger kids don't always
right.
get it. And then they look at the picture and they look at it and then they, you know, they're proud that they found it. They also get their fidgetiness out because they can touch something. And then, you know, while they're looking, their parents can look at the art for a few minutes. So it's been incredibly popular. In fact, that director said he gets the most letters about when you're going to replace the eye spies and get new ones. So.
Now, yeah. In terms of a tour, how does that work if somebody wants a tour?
Well, if you want a guided tour, we have docents here. We have a public tour weekdays at 1, and I believe Sundays at 1 and 3. So you can just join a public tour. But if you have a group of 15 or more, you can call in ahead and one of our volunteers will be scheduled, and you can, you know, there's different topics. You can just tour, you know, the topic of women in art or religion in art or, you know, contemporary art, or you can get a general tour. And then we also have audio tours in English, Spanish, and Japanese that people can take. And we, for families, we have these self-guided tours that are little booklets. And one of them is called 10 Things to Do with Kids. So it gives you, you know, a little map and little things like our spiral staircase or the armor. And then the other one is sports in art and or scary, you know, not real scary, but it's called Yikes, and it's like objects with kind of a scary theme. So kids really like that. And then the parents have a guide to take them through, and it tells a little bit about the artwork so they can answer kids' questions. So that's really popular with families.
Now, is this an added charge, or is this...
These self-guided tours, you just pick them up at the desks.
For
the audio tours, I believe there's a $2 charge.
Okay. And how about, for the public tour or group tour?
Oh, public tour is free, yeah. Almost all of our programs are free with museum admission.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for people out of town, we are probably the least expensive museum you'll ever go to. It's $8 for adults and $4 for children ages 6 to 17. And then we actually, our reinstallation was such a success, we got a regional tax, people voted to tax themselves to support us in the surrounding counties, so those residents get in free all the time, free general admission.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's really
great.
It's really a great museum to come, you know, for the first time or second or 100th time. There's something to see. And there really is something for everybody's taste, not to mention good shopping and eating.
Yeah, right. So and aside from being able, people seeing like paintings and drawings and photographs, there's also
sculptures too. Yes. Oh, we have beautiful sculptures. Yes. Yes. We have, you know, people might have heard of Rodin who did The Thinker. That's kind of iconic, where the guy's sitting with his legs crossed and his hand on his chin. We have the Thinker right outside of the museum. And then we have several more sculptures by him inside. And we have Edgar Degas, who did a lot of ballet dancers, sculptures by him, as well as a lot of contemporary and modern artists as well. So, yeah, all kinds of art.
And in terms of with the floors, does somebody say, well, we want these things on the first floor or second floor, third floor? I mean, is it, you know, it's like when you go shopping at a store and they put things at eye level because want you to get them first. So have if somebody says, I just have time to see the first floor, the things there purposely there because You know,
no, that's not why, actually. When we reinstalled it, it was really a matter of a function of space and proximity as far as what collections might relate to other collections. You know, that was some of the thinking. Our Native American and African collections are on the first floor. Most of our European are on the second and third floor. But it's really just a factor of how the galleries were laid out and how many objects we have in those collections.
Oh, okay. I was just curious about that. So, and what would you say is the average time to take to get enough of, you know, to take it
in?
Yeah. 3 hours?
Yeah, 3 hours would be good. I mean, people can get tired after that. If you're a real trooper, you could come in for a couple hours and then have lunch and then, you know, see another part of the museum. But we also have wonderful volunteers, and if you say, hi, I only have an hour, what should I see? So we have, I don't know if they actually have lists or not, but they can point out where, if you only have an hour, this is what you should see. You know, here's what we're most famous for, that kind of thing. Or if someone said, I only like contemporary art, well, they'll say, okay, you need to go to the second floor on this side. And so we have people, you know, who are very helpful in planning visits. And in the summers, we actually have something for families where they come in and they tell us how much time they have, what they kind of art they want to see. And it's like a family fitting room in a way. And the volunteers will plot out a visit based on what you tell them. And Pete,
okay.
That's really popular
and,
as well.
And just for the visit and notation, can people take photographs?
Yes. You can take photographs as long as you don't use a tripod or anything on a stand or flash. And nothing
special.
Okay, so,
no flash photography, which is, I you know, when I go to a place like that, and like I'm going, but the whole point is the lighting is set up so you don't have to take flash photography.
Exactly.
You don't need flash photography. But it's also, just, you know, especially, you know, if you have things that are sensitive, artwork
sensitive to light, like
And
it's hard for people to discern, so we just say no flash photography. You know, I mean, we know it works on paper, but sometimes we have galleries that have paintings, and then there might be a print right in the middle of the two paintings. So rather than say this one, not that one, it's easier just to say no flash, and most people are fine with that.
Okay. So, I mean, actually, if somebody wanted to, they can walk around and take a photo of everything that's in there, I guess.
Yeah, just about. Just about, yeah. Or video, you know, that's okay, too.
Oh, so, okay, so people can take a video. Boy, that would have been easier for me if I did that.
There you go.
I'll remember the next time.
yeah. Well, I hope you come back. I think you enjoyed yourself.
Oh, I certainly did. I think what I enjoyed about it, it's not as complicated as the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
We hear that a lot. Yes, that can be overwhelming.
It was just enough. Without, you know. But that's fine. So I appreciate that you're calling in and chatting with us about it. And
my pleasure.
You know, it's already my article was already submitted. And I forgot all about the iSpy, but that's okay. I can throw that in my blog.
Yeah, no problem. So, well, I hope if people are in the area, they get a chance to stop in because.
Yeah,
it's not like other museum experiences. And I think people
would
be very pleasantly surprised.
Okay. Well, thanks again. And
you're welcome.
You'll get a copy of the article, I guess. That'll get your way.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Okay. You too. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Yes. That was just one of many museums that I went to in between eating. I'd like to talk about Michigan in general. So we're going to talk, it's called Pure Michigan. Isn't that what we're calling it, huh? As opposed to, is there an Unpure Michigan, Michelle?
No. There's just various degrees of Pure Michigan. Depends on what you want your Pure Michigan to be. If you want it to be great cultural institutions and food, like I know you mentioned, we've got that. If you want your Pure Michigan to be beautiful natural beauty, we've got that. Pure Michigan is in the eye of the beholder, for sure.
Uh-huh. Well, before we get into Art Prize, what I want to get into is, like, you had been talking about that there's a lot of tourism with Michigan. Why?
Yes. Why? Because we couldn't keep Michigan a secret any longer. We have had, I mean, we've always had tourism here in the state, but since 2006 when we launched the Pure Michigan campaign, we have really had a very dedicated effort towards growing tourism in Michigan. And in 2009, we launched our first ever national advertising campaign. So, you know, folks who vacationed in Michigan previously were a lot of Michigan residents. We're very fortunate that people that live in Michigan also like to vacation and travel in Michigan. And then, you know, our surrounding neighbors in the Great Lakes states, Chicago and Illinois, Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin. So what we're really trying to do is introduce Michigan as a tourism destination to all of the other folks across the country, folks out in New York, folks out in Texas, where it gets so hot in the summertime, and tell them, come to Michigan. We've got beautiful summer weather, 70 to 80 degrees during the day. It's cool in the night. And really making, when people are thinking about where do I want to take a vacation this year, getting Michigan on their radar. And what we're seeing is, folks didn't really necessarily know about Michigan, but now they're coming, and once they get there, usually the state sells itself pretty well, and we've seen a pretty steady growth of out-of-state travelers coming to Michigan over the past couple of years.
What the, I know we visited, you know, we went to four cities.
Mm-hmm.
What are there any other, what other cities are like, big destinations?
Well, you know, Michigan is a much bigger state than a lot of people realize. So we've got a lot of cities with very different personalities. So we, of course, visited Detroit and Ann Arbor. And Ann Arbor is a great city, and we only got to spend a brief amount of time there. There's so much more there you could see or do. East Lansing and Grand Rapids. Traverse City has become a huge destination, especially in the summertime. There's great wineries up there, beautiful scenes. It's right near Sleeping Bear Dunes, which has won accolades across the country and across the world. Good Morning America named it the most beautiful place in America. So that entire region is very, very popular. You've got the UP for folks that really want to kind of explore nature and see nature at some of its most pristine. You can go up to the UP. You've got Marquette, which is a college town. It's got about 10,000 folks. Or you can get away. You can go to somewhere like Isle Royale, which is one of the least visited national parks in the country. You have to take a boat or a plane to get there. There's no cars, and you can really get away. So Michigan offers a whole host of different types of destinations for whatever the visitor may be seeking in their vacation.
And that's also the Grand Hotel, which is the scene.
Oh, Mackinac Island.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't forget about Mackinac Island.
Somewhere
and the Mackinac
in time.
Bridge. Somewhere in time, yeah. Mackinac Island is always a very popular destination here in Michigan.
You know, I have to say, it's like there were two numbers from that show, from that movie, and I'll always recognize them anytime someone plays the piano and plays those songs.
Well, you know, they still have every year on the island, I believe it's in September, they have the Somewhere in Time weekend, and they still have people come every year, and they come and they dress up in the fashion of the time
God.
And they have speakers come, and they take tours of the locations used on the island for that film, and it is still a very, very popular part of Mackinac Island, but they do this weekend every year, and it's extremely popular, and they're still legions of fans that come and celebrate that movie on the island.
I can imagine. Anyway, it happened to be one of my favorite movies. Just, I don't know, just something about it, you know, that whole thing, that whole mystery kind of thing as well.
Yeah.
But, so let's get to, so here we were, Detroit and Ann Arbor, and by the way, is there a West Lansing or is there a downtown
In formal West Lansing, there is not a formal West Lansing. There's only Lansing and East Lansing as far as cities go.
Okay.
But you'll hear the locals talk about West Lansing sometimes.
Okay, so if we went to, I guess, Lansing, I guess that's, would that be like they call it, like downtown Lansing? Is that where the Capitol building is?
Yes. Downtown Lansing is our state capital, so you've got the Capitol and you've got all of the state office buildings. The state library, the state historical museum is there, courthouses. It's very government, if you will. And our Capitol is beautiful, so I definitely encourage if you ever find yourself in Lansing, stop by. And then East Lansing, which is where the Broad Museum is where Michigan State University is, and that's much more of a college town type of atmosphere.
Okay. And lots of food.
Lots of food. We love food in Michigan. We do food really well in Michigan. We are a very agriculturally diverse state, and so that whole food-to-table trend has picked up a lot of steam here in the state, and a lot of our local restaurants and chefs are embracing that. And the result is, I think, as you experienced, some pretty good meal options across the state.
Yeah. I have a feeling I might be the only writer that's actually describing every single thing we ate as well.
I know, and people are probably going to be shocked that that we ate that much food in 4 days.
Well, this was kind of like the destination or the final destination in terms of being art was to be in where they're having Art Prize.
Absolutely. So Art Prize takes place in Grand Rapids. It started in 2009, so it's relatively young, but it has exploded. It is a huge art fair, an art festival. What they do is they bring artists from literally all over the world to an open contest. Folks can submit their works, and then the public judges them, and those works are installed throughout the city in buildings and museums, in the middle of the river, on bridges, on the sides of buildings. So when you're in Grand Rapids during Art Prize, you're surrounded by art. You're surrounded by people looking at art. And again, the public votes on those pieces. And after the initial period of open voting, the top 10 are selected based on popular vote. And there's another round of voting where folks can vote on those top 10. And the winner gets a pretty significant prize. I think it's about $200,000, which is a pretty huge art prize. And then, you know, second place gets money all the way down to 10th place. So.
Also a juried vote too, right?
There's also, yes, a juried vote that has been added to the competition, and the juried grand prize is $100,000. So it's an opportunity for folks to experience a lot of different types of art. They've got, obviously, your more traditional paintings and sculptures, but there's also musical submissions. There's digital media submissions. So it's very accessible. It's right there. You're looking at it. You're walking around. You're seeing it. A lot of times the artists are there, and you can talk to them and hear about their process and what they got their inspiration from. And it really takes over the city of Grand Rapids for a couple of weeks. They get hundreds of thousands of folks that come into town to experience Art Prize. And, you know, downtown Grand Rapids is one of our really growing urban areas. Grand Rapids is the heart of Michigan's microbrew scene, so it's got it's known as Beer City USA, and they've got some great microbrews and breweries there. Great food. They just opened up the city market, which has some really great vendors inside and a farmers market outside and space to do cooking demonstrations. So there's just a lot going on in downtown Grand Rapids, and Art Prize just kind of brings it all together and brings a lot of people to experience that.
So now let's just say, I'm an artist, and so I'm basically like Googling stuff, and I find out they had this Art Prize thing event takes place every year. Okay, and I'm going, I would like to be part of it. You know, I mean, even I would imagine that will artists do this just for the publicity?
Well, I mean, certainly it's a way for you to pretty much guarantee that your art's going to be seen by a large group of people. But one of the things that kind of helps to temper that is the voting system that's in place, because in order to vote on an Art Prize exhibit, you do have to actually physically at some point be at Art Prize. So really you've got to play to the audience, which are the folks that are there, and you've got everyone competing for that, as opposed to, you know, posting something on your Facebook page and mobilizing
right.
your fans from across the world to vote on your piece. So the folks that are voting, and I was just on the website, and so far they've got almost 180,000 votes so far since they launched last Wednesday for Art Prize. So that's in the span of less than a week. They've had 180,000, you know, not necessarily people, but 180,000 votes logged into their system. So I think it just kind of goes to show the how far and wide that this I don't even know what to call it, contest. It's not a contest, but this event goes.
Right. So, but I'm saying, okay, so as an artist, let's just say, and I'm just going to say, like, I have a painting. Now, does anybody, I'm first submitting that I want to have my painting there. Am I correct? And is there somebody that says yes or no?
Yeah, so it's open to anyone over 18. They do have to register your artwork. There's a registration period, and that's, so this year that was April through June. And then there's a period where the venues, the folks that have signed up to be an Art Prize venue, kind of pick which pieces of art they want to host on their site. So it's kind of like a matchmaking period where they'll say, okay, I like that one, I like that one, I like that one. Like, for example, Frederick Meyer Gardens and Sculpture Park curated a glass exhibit. So all of the pieces that they looked for were glass works. And then once that venue is secured, they work with them to display the artwork. And there are certain rules and restrictions, and to make sure that, A, it's safe for everyone, it's fair for everyone. But, you know, it's, again, it's very broad. You can enter in essentially any medium that you want to participate.
So, in other words, it's not that I can say, and I want this outdoors only, or I want this indoors only.
Right, and I think during the registration process, you can kind of say, this is the type of place that I want to view my work. But it's very collaborative with the venues, working with the artists, working with Art Prize in order to get the actual locations that these works of art are exhibited at. One of the things is that it has to be the first time that it's a work of art is entered in Art Prize, so you can't come back with the same thing year after year after year. You have to bring something new to the table. But, you know, and then, of course, there's rules on the website. There's a $50 non-refundable fee to enter the artwork, but, you know, that's a pretty low barrier for folks that are looking for some exposure and looking to get their art in front of a wide group of people.
So now, this is what I would think. At the Meyer Gardens, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because it's a place that's of art, you know, going there, would that deter it? Because, like, in other words, like, as opposed to seeing your artwork at the Amway,
mm-hmm.
where...
Well, you know, I think it just depends. I mean, the public latches on to different things. So, for example, the winner last year was at the Grand Rapids Art Museum. That's where it was displayed. And certainly there are large groups of people that go through the Grand Rapids Art Museum. But the previous year's winner was displayed at the DeVos Place Convention Center, which is not a place that you would traditionally go to look at art anyway. So, you know, there's just a really – it's interesting. Every year the winning entry is a little bit different. Last year it was a pencil drawing. The year before that it was a stained glass mosaic. We had – the first ever one was a – they called it a 2D art form. It was, and you can see that at the Reserve. It's up behind the bar there now. And that's the other great thing. A lot of these,
right.
these pieces of art stay in Grand Rapids even after Art Prize is over in various capacities.
And by the way, I was trying to, because I need to put this in my blog, we thought it was an angel. We were at the Reserve.
Yeah.
But it
yeah.
wasn't an angel, was it? Was it an angel?
You know, I don't know exactly what that is. We'll have to find. And you can find the art on
I
the website.
I was trying to
have...
find it because I have a photo, and it looked like, I guess if you want to call, like a man with wings.
Yeah, I know it was LED. So we'll have to look. I mean, because that was a pretty spectacular thing to see just floating by when you are at
what I was trying to do is in my blog is to put down whether this was this somebody just taking it over to a to the venue versus, you know, if you look out the window of the Revere, you'll see it across the street when you go.
Right.
That's what I was trying to catch.
I just did a little research while we were talking, and the entry is called Taking Flight, and it is suspended from the ceiling of the DeVos Center. So the artist, prior to officially installing the piece, floated it around Grand Rapids, which is what we saw when it was kind of floating its way through the city. But it is, for the duration of the art prize, installed at the DeVos Center from the ceiling.
Okay,
Definitely worth folks checking out if they happen to be in Grand Rapids for Art Prize, because it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, so at least I know it's called Taking Flight. So I was trying to find out about it. What I understand is that in terms of visitors, now you can there's a hub that people can go to and pick up the Art Prize event guide, correct?
Correct, and that is also where they can register to vote. As we mentioned, you have to register on site or through your mobile app, which only activates that the app for the Art Prize only activates when you're within the, I think it's about 3 square mile radius of where Art Prize is taking place. And that way they can verify that you were, in fact, there in person. And at that point, you can then, if you want to wait till you're home to actually vote from your desktop, you can do that. A lot of the artists will have postcards with a picture of their piece of art and their number, their voting number on it.
The
hub is a great
place. You can go around and get, you know, even if you don't even take a camera. You just get postcards.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I'm sorry I didn't get there after. Wait a
and
minute.
There was a few of them. I managed to collect a few of them while we were taking the tours. But it, unfortunately, not everything was out quite yet when we were there.
Right.
It's getting a trading card.
If you happen to be in Grand Rapids while this is going on, go around and pick them up for me and send them over.
Right. And the
now
hub
that's
is exactly. Here's all of the pieces. The hub is also just a great place, especially if you've never been to Art Prize, just to kind of get a sense of where you might want to start, how you might want to tackle this, because it is spread out across the city, and it's a very walkable city. But the hub can kind of give you information on where everything is, so you can kind of put a plan of action together. So definitely, and the winning prize, the winning piece of from last year, I believe, is at the Hub as well. So you can check that out.
Now, also, I understand that, like, okay, that it's free and open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
If the art pieces are in, let's say, a museum,
mm-hmm.
is it located where, in other words, you're not paying to get into the museum?
Yeah, you know, I don't have the exact answer to that question.
Okay.
Most of the art that you will see is in public places, or for the period of time for Art Prize, it will be open to the public. So, for example, the Art Prize pieces that are at the Public Museum in downtown Grand Rapids are all located outside and around the museum.
Okay.
So you don't necessarily have to go inside to see those works. I know at the Grand Rapids Art Museum, they usually have a line that is very long to get in there. So I think that they pretty much have that, turn the museum into an art prize venue during this time. So
okay.
Folks can get in.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool. Yeah, well, of course, we'll follow this up with finding out, like, who got the prize.
Yeah.
Who got the prizes. By that time, I'll have the article done. Where it's taking time.
Well, there's a lot of art there.
There's a lot of words that I'm writing. Part one is going to be in this Thursday's paper.
Perfect.
Part one is just Detroit. just Detroit alone. Yeah.
Well, Detroit, you could have like 10 parts on just Detroit.
Just
Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids, I'm hoping to get to do in one article, because with Grand Rapids, it's twofold, because I'm, you know, one is just about Art Prize itself.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole topic with that. Plus, you know, I'm going to be pointing out, you know, that at this particular place, you know, there's artwork, because we're also looking at that, like in the brewery that we
Absolutely.
Went to with the founders, that there's Art Prize stuff there too. So, you know, even
literally all over the city. All
yeah.
over the city. And in venues that you wouldn't, like you said, like founders, you wouldn't necessarily think about it being there. And it's worth noting, founders actually did a specialty Art Prize beer this year.
Really?
So it's really something that the whole city gets behind and embraces and comes together and activates for. So there's synergy across the city. There's Art Prize menus, and there's Art Prize beers, and there's Art Prize art. So it's just a great coming together of folks around art, which is something that you don't necessarily see a lot of in this large of a capacity. And it's very accessible. I mean, I think that's important, too. Like, this is not necessarily
yeah.
art that you stand 20 feet back and there's plexiglass around it and security
right.
guards. And, you know, it's art that's meant to be enjoyed and experienced in a very broad range of people. And so it's the one time a year a lot of people really get to get up close and personal and experience art on that level.
Well, it'll be interesting to the last museum I went to, with the names, I'm getting ready mixed up with all
the
public
museum.
Art?
Yeah, with like the historical stuff in it.
Yeah,
yep.
And I noticed, like, if you look out, when I was looking outside, there were people putting together something for Art
yeah,
Prize.
I mean, it has become, you know, we were there the weekend before it officially launched, but you could
mm-hmm.
see people already coming into town so that they could experience artists installing their works. When we were there at the public museum, they were putting in an installation in the middle of the river. And so they had
right.
their boats full of whatever it was that they were putting up, and they were in their waders, and they were out in the river. And, you know, that's exciting for people to watch, too. How does it happen? How does it get how does this turn into this thing in the middle of the Grand River?
Yeah, I was able to get some photos of things being put together, so I can throw that up on my blog as well. But as I said, it would be interesting. Now whatever it was that was out there in the river is done. Now how would I find that? Do I look for the venue of the museum?
Yeah, you can look for venues. They are all on the website. So there is a Grand River venue site, and the Grand River is hosting two projects this year, which would be Silkwaves in the Grand, which is what we saw them constructing, and then there's a Good Luck Fish. So you can search the venues on the artprize.org website, and then you can find, or you can search the art. So for the LED, the Taking Flight, I just searched the site for LED Angel. And even though it's not an angel, it was able to find it for me. So all of the pieces of art are up there. So you can search by venue, you can search by medium, you can search by category, and find, if you're looking for something very specific, it's available there for you.
Oh, good. That's really cool. So, all right. So I'm hoping we can get another press. Get another press trip where I get to go to Traverse City, I guess. Do they do that, or they really center on? Do you basically center on the places that I went to?
No, we do them all over the state. I mean, we try to have kind of a theme in mind, just to kind of streamline it, because there is so much, especially when we go to places like Detroit or Traverse City or Grand Rapids, you could spend your entire time there. So, you know, we like to spread the love. We like to showcase all different parts of Michigan. So we've done the Alpena area, Alpena and the Bay City area, Tall Ships this year. We've done winter adventure trips up to the UP in northern Michigan. We've done trips to Traverse City that kind of focus on the culinary angle and some of the produce and food that they have to offer up there. So it changes every single year, and we just try really hard to make sure that we are getting a good representation of everything that Michigan has to offer out there.
Right. Well, we're certainly going to get a tour of Detroit. Oh, by the way, I just also wanted to let you know that I already played the commercial of Fairy Tale Brownies in the beginning.
Perfect.
Because I didn't want you to drool. Well,
I'm already drooling. I'm hungry. You know, it's my afternoon snack time.
Okay. And as I said, you'll understand, it's up to you if you want to share.
We'll see how nice and how hungry I'm feeling that day.
Well, it's not the nice and hungry. It's once you taste it, you may say, I want this all for me. I mean, it's for you. You know.
Wow.
I did this before. What happened? I did this before, and I called the guy. I said, so how is it? I said, did you eat it all? He says, no, I only had like one or two, and I shared the rest of them. And I'm going, yeah, but why? You didn't really have to. Because I have no idea what they're sending. They sent a batch of like 36 little brownies to this guy. You know, I'm going, and he only had two. Okay.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be a battle of my self-control, which I usually lose that battle.
Well, you can, you know, take them and freeze them and whatever you want to do, kind of thing. But just fair warning, that's all. But in the meantime, the walking tour of Detroit.
Yeah.
Of course I missed that, but however, I have somebody from D-Hive.
Fabulous. They're going to come on the show with you.
That's now calling in. Yeah, she's, as a matter of fact, she's on the show right now. So she's going to give us, this will be interesting to me, having not, you know, either gone on the tour or haven't gone over to hear the tour, because I'm curious, like, as to what else is in Detroit. Hello, Jeanette.
Hello. How are you today?
Oh, just great. Now, by the way, Michelle, if you want to hang on, you can, and if you don't, that's you could, you know, we could say bye-bye to you. It's up to you.
I'll wait for my brownies and call anytime. We love talking about Pure Michigan.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
So Jeanette, okay, this is going to be interesting because, all right, not only would not have been able to do a walking tour, but it rained that day anyway, so we had sitting in a lobby tour.
Did you go with, go ahead.
So just basically, let's go with what I would have heard, all the things that, in things that we didn't cover. I mean, we went to, you know, the art places and ate. I was about to call the trip the Arts and Farts Tour, because that's what we did was eat and see art.
Did you go to the Guardian Building? Did you make it there?
I think some of the writers did go to the Guardian Building. I think that was, what was that connected to? Because I remember that, we had gone to one museum and then they wanted to go to the Guardian Building. So what was there anyway?
So the Guardian Building is just one of those just amazing buildings, literally one of the most beautiful buildings in the entire country. It was built in 1929 to be a bank's headquarters, but they told the architect, spare no expense, make it a cathedral to finance. And when the minute you walk in, you are just, it's literally the definition of jaw-dropping. It has Tiffany glass clock, like, two huge Tiffany glass clocks. It has the special metal that was a precursor to stainless steel called Monel metal. It has beautiful tile in all different colors and mosaics. I mean, it is absolutely gorgeous. It also has great little small businesses in it as well. So it's a great example of, like, Detroit's grandeur in the 20s and our strong architecture heritage, but also about what's happening today, which is creative small businesses like Pure Detroit or the Roland Cafe and Stella Cafe, which are also in the Guardian Building.
Okay. Now, let's now talk about one of the things that I'm into, so we can kind of get this. I'm into the entertainment type arts. What's there in Detroit?
Like theater and that kind of stuff, you mean?
Theater, music kind of thing.
Sure. We have the second largest theater district in the entire country, actually. We have over 13,000 theater seats in a 2-block radius around Grand Circus Park, which is one of the historic parks in the Central Business District. So we have the Fox Theater, which is absolutely gorgeous. It was built in 1928 to be the world's most beautiful movie palace. And it's hard for a lot of people to imagine, but literally they built this palace where people would go see the movies. 5,000 people at a time would go see the movies, right? And just to give you, for people to use their imaginations, as we're on the radio, it cost $12 million to build the Fox Theater in 1928, which is about almost $200 million today. And most of that was spent in all sorts of elaborate decoration, it's really nice. But today it has Broadway shows and, musical acts and those things. We also have the Opera House, which was originally built in 1922 and seats 2,700 people. And again, another one of those huge movie palaces. But then we have little places too, like the Gem and Century Theater, which is actually in the Guinness Book of World Records for the heaviest they ever moved. They actually moved it to make room for Comerica Park, our new baseball stadium. But that has, like, your fun little musicals, like Menopause the Musical or a Rat Pack Review, and it's a little bit more cabaret style. And then you even have a little avant-garde theater right there as well, right across from the Opera House, 1515 Broadway, which has poetry readings and, poetry slam contests and irreverent political satire type of shows and improv comedy. So literally an entire spectrum of all sorts of things within just box of each other.
And then, of course, there's you got the Motown Museum, huh?
Yeah. I mean, and one thing that no other city has, I mean, we every city has theaters, every city has baseball and that kind of stuff, but there's no other city that has a Motown Museum. And the Motown Museum is definitely something to be added to everybody's bucket list. You literally stand in this small space that was a studio. You think studio, you think it's big space, or you think museum, you think huge space. It's actually two small houses, and you stand in that spot where all these number one hits. And the documentary for about the bands, which is called Standing in the Shadows of Motown, has the best tagline. It really helps sum up a little bit of Motown, which is that this band had more number one hits than the Beatles, Elvis, and Madonna combined. That's how big Motown was, and to stand in that exact spot is pretty amazing.
Oh, okay. So it's not a huge place.
No, it's actually so Berry Gordy lived in this house. He bought this house in 1959 for $800. He borrowed money from his parents, and they gave him a 1 year to pay it back, too. It's kind of funny. But he did. So he turned the garage into a recording studio, and the rest is literally history. Now, eventually, he owned 8 houses on that block that were all used as part of Motown, because at the time, it was difficult for African-Americans to get commercial leases and regular office space and things, so frequently they were out of houses. And today, the museum is made up of 2 of those houses, right there on East Grand Boulevard. And so you get to tour both the place where Berry Gordy lived and also the studio and then the other part that they've made the museum of where, you know, all of the records and Michael Jackson's glove, the Jackson 5, you know, Michael Jackson started with Motown as well. Not everybody remembers that one, but it's pretty amazing.
Can you, do they have somewhere you can pick out songs to listen to, like a library to do that? Or videos, or either that or videos.
Yeah, so at the very beginning, you watch a video that kind of gives you an overview. So the museum is almost all guided tours. I mean, you can go through it on your own, but they have like a guided tour leaving every 15 minutes, basically. So, and the guides are great, and they're performers themselves, and they'll sing with you and get you singing. They also have a great little video to start off with. They do have you actually stand in that exact same spot and sing and dance a little bit if you want to. And then, of course, there's a great gift shop where you can, buy different CDs and records and album covers and all of that stuff.
Okay, now let's also talk about, just like any city, you have neighborhoods.
Yes. Yeah, we have some really great neighborhoods, and unfortunately, you don't hear about those a lot. You know, we have our downtown, our midtown, like our central business district, and then we have some not-so-great neighborhoods, which you hear seemingly a lot about. But we have really amazing neighborhoods, and again, with some amazing architecture. I mean, you have your bigger houses, like an Indian Village, which was like where the auto barons built their mansions, and you know, on the outskirts was really just like 3 miles from downtown, you know, at that point. So Indian Village is absolutely gorgeous. The homes average around 10,000 square feet, and they are, every one of them is uniquely different. You also have Northwest Detroit, really a mix of just really great solid neighborhoods, larger homes in Palmer Woods. But then a lot of the Motown people actually, you know, you can go by Marvin Gaye's house and, in all the neighborhoods over there, Green Acres. And Livernois is a really, is a main street. And they have, it's called the Avenue of Fashion, historically, and they've been doing a lot to bring that back lately. And there's Baker's Keyboard Lounge over there, which is the oldest jazz club in the country. And then some new restaurants and new art things. And that's at 7 Mile in Livernois in what they call the Avenue of Fashion, right in the middle of a bunch of really great, solid neighborhoods. But we also have other diverse neighborhoods as well, like Southwest Detroit has a large Latino population. Hamtramck is actually one of the most diverse zip codes in the country. It's only 2.4 square miles, but it has 16 different countries. people from 16 different countries living in that 2 square miles. And it's historically Polish, but now there's also Bangladeshi and Albanian and Yemenis. And so you also get great music and food and culture, you know, from all those different backgrounds at that spot, too.
Okay. What about, do they have, you know, they always seem to have a Chinatown every place. Is there one there, too?
You know, that is one of the few things that we don't really have. There was a small Chinatown that was destroyed by the freeways and some other, you know, urban redevelopment in the, like the 60s and 70s kind of stuff. But we didn't have a large Chinese population in the city, though we do now in like the suburbs. There are definitely some places, but it was we. It's kind of like in Michigan, it's kind of like the, it's like 1 or 2% Asian, though we have a large Indian population, and that's growing by leaps and bounds every day as well.
What
so
about
we don't have a traditional Chinatown.
The other in thing, is there a gayborhood?
Yes, we do have
a gayborhood.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what's unique about Detroit, too, is that we have some, there's cities, like in a lot of cities, you might, like New York, you have 5 boroughs and all these neighborhoods, but it's all one city, right? And in Detroit, we splintered because every time they built a new factory, they wanted to keep it its own separate city. So, like our neighborhood, if you will, is Ferndale, which is technically not part of the city of Detroit. It's just adjacent to the city. But for anybody visiting, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it is just a neighborhood in the city. And it is it's a fabulous, yes, very diverse, very welcoming, lots of gay culture there. But our also Detroit itself is very friendly to gay and lesbians and transgender. And they've actually just grown the gay Pride Festival so big that it is now downtown in the middle of Hart Plaza where all of the other large festivals take place. It used to just be in Ferndale and be more of a neighborhood festival, but it's just continuing to grow and grow and grow. And with all the great architecture that we have, there's a lot of people actually coming to scoop up some of these great architectural gems, like whether it's, you know, the mansions or the mid-century modern is a very popular. We actually have the largest collection of Mies van der Rohe buildings in the world here in Detroit. So lots of people come to see and buy those.
Let me also ask you about the, what is it called, the People Mover?
Mm-hmm.
Am I getting
so
that right?
Yes. The People Mover is a funny name. I will admit that. It is our monorail that it just loops around downtown. I mean, it's not really like a transit option per se. I mean, you don't go very far on it, but it does get you anywhere within the Central Business District. It's only 75 cents, and it just goes in one directional, like a 3.2-mile loop around downtown to all, like, the major destinations and things. And really, it's, kids love it because it is an elevated monorail. So, and really anyone, because you get a great vantage point. Well, all of the entire area that the People Mover goes in is also all very walkable, but it's great to do a little 20-minute loop around, get an overview, get some good shots and perspectives, because, again, you're on the second floor. You actually go through a few different buildings, which is kind of neat. And yeah, it's only 75 cents, and it's absolutely impossible to get lost on, because it goes in one direction in a circle.
Okay. Yeah, I saw at one point I saw it and went, forgot to get a picture, didn't realize, because it's really, it's the thing, it's the tram or whatever you want to call it itself is picturesque.
Yeah, I mean, and actually the funny, we just had Transformers 4 filming here, which is being like, They filmed it here, but they made it look like Hong Kong. And so they actually had the People Mover, our tram, painted with advertising in, like, Chinese. It was kind of funny. But it comes every 4 minutes, and it's just a quick little loop around downtown. And then it will connect to, we are actually building a light rail system right now that will connect, will go 3.8 miles, basically. And connect the museum district and the medical district and some of the other parts of downtown. So we're getting there, you know, 3 miles and then 6 miles and then, you know, who knows.
Oh, so it'll be more than just a walking thing.
Right.
Yeah. Or for me, who can't really do a lot of walking, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's go food-wise. Is it like, if you want to call it a Detroit cuisine, is there something that's specific to, you know, it's like you go to Philadelphia and it's the cheese, you know. Is there something that you would expect?
Yes, there's two different things. So there's the, you know, we do have amazing food because when you look at both then being like the early 20th century with the auto industry, literally people came from all over the world and they brought with them their amazing food and then they started mixing and matching and all of that. Also, we have such one of the silver linings that people ignoring us for so long, for the last 40 years at least, was that we didn't get overrun with chain restaurants. So we actually have 150 bars and restaurants just in the Central Business District, and almost every single one is locally owned and operated. And so they have the owner in the kitchen or behind the bar or making their specialty brisket or making that, you know. So there's really this high level of quality that a lot of cities, and it's not super expensive because also it's not super expensive in Detroit. So you get great food at a great price, and then the people are really friendly because the owner will come out and chat with you, and you'll be best friends within 5 minutes. So lots of great food on that side. But in terms of like our equivalent of the Philly cheesesteak, it's called the Coney Dog. And it's the story with that is basically a hot dog with chili, mustard, and onions on it. And the story is that this gentleman came from Greece, you know, 100 years ago and stopped in Coney Island, New York, where he had his first hot dog. He continued on, got to Detroit, and he added chili, mustard, and onions, and he named it after where he first had his hot dog. So it's called the Coney Island Hot Dog.
Okay.
And so there are two places that have been around almost 100 years. They're directly next to each other. They used to be owned by the same family. You know, the story every city has, you know. And so, yes, people get very serious about which one. So it's American Coney Island or Lafayette Coney Island. And people get in fights over it all the time. So, and that's what you'll see on the Food Network and the Travel Channel, the taste test and all of that. So I always recommend, you know, doing a little taste test to see which dog is better and coming down on one of the sides there. But in general, it's kind of funny. If you do come to Detroit, you'll see a lot of things, a lot of places called Coney Island. Coney Island in Detroit has basically just become synonymous with diners. So you'll see, you know, Gus's Coney Island. Frequently they are Greek, so it's like Leo's Coney Island, Gus's Coney Island. And then, yes, they'll have the Coney Island hot dog, but they'll also frequently, you know, chili cheese fries and Greek salads and, you know, just diner. And frequently they're open 24 hours or open very late and are very affordable. But that's definitely one of the questions we get from people. They're like, why does everything say Coney Island around here? Are we in New York or what's going on?
Right.
But no, that's just became, you know, synonymous with, you know, basically cheap late night eats.
are there any kosher delis?
We do, yeah. I mean, we have, in downtown you have the Gateway Deli and a few others.
So you can get a kosher hot dog. You can get a kosher Coney.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you definitely can. I mean, there's, you know, the ballpark for, like, there's kosher dogs all over the place. And we do have a Jewish neighborhood, but similarly to the Ferndale and the gay neighborhood, it's just outside the city limits in kind of the, you know, Oak Park, West Bloomfield area. But, you know, we also have, you know, one of the things that's very unique about Detroit is we have the largest Arabic population outside of the Middle East. So we have all sorts of Lebanese food, Yemenese food. I mean, and to us living in the region, you know, chicken shawarmas and, you know, hummus and tabbouleh and all these things are just part of our, you know, what we have all the time because there's just such a high concentration of Middle Eastern food. And it's funny talking to people from other places because sometimes they're like, what? What's a shawarma? I've never heard of that.
Right.
Also, Greektown, we do have a historically a large Greek population. So everybody, I mean, through the ups and downs of the city, Greektown, which isn't residential in a neighborhood really anymore, but it does have a concentration of Greek restaurants and Greek owners and all that. You know, the flaming cheese, Saganaki, where you literally they light the cheese on fire at your table, is a very popular dish here in Detroit. And we grew up with it. Everyone, you know, if you always went to Greektown as a kid. And I remember thinking, wait, everybody doesn't know what Saganaki is? Like, that's weird. And then Southwest Detroit, of course, with from all different parts of South America and Latin America, and great taco trucks. And, I mean, it seems similarly, everyone's got their favorite. There's tons and tons and tons of restaurants over there, and bakeries and coffee shops, and really a large art scene as well, with great murals and galleries all throughout Southwest Detroit, or what's called Mexican Town sometimes.
Does anybody using, like, the theme of cars, like that you sit in a, you know, your seat is actually a car?
Like
a car
seat, yeah, no. You know, it's funny. I mean, occasionally there'll be a restaurant that'll have a name like, you know, the Chrome Grill or something. There might be some photos or things, but we have not really done much with, you know, like the kitschiness of you, you know, of the cars, right? Like that, like it's in Motown similarly. I think it's kind of crazy. Hey, if anyone wants to open a business, come to Detroit and open a Motown cafe where you like sit in cars and, you know, have Motown performers, because I think it would be a big hit. But we just, you know, people like to do more like grassroots things in restaurants versus, you know, kind of big production type of places.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else that we want to hit upon?
Yeah, I think that in general, you know, obviously Detroit can get a bad reputation, but anyone who's actually been here and visited and experienced it is always absolutely blown away, because there is there's all this big city stuff, right? You got three major sports stadiums, by the way, right downtown. Most cities don't have that. They have them, but they're all spread out. And they just announced a new hockey stadium that will be literally across the street from our baseball and football. So football, baseball, hockey, directly across the street from each other. And some pretty good teams, if I do say so myself, the Red Wings, the Tigers. Okay, the Lions have some work to do. But anyway, they're all right down there. And that's surrounded by those 13,000 theater seats. So all this big city stuff, restaurants, bars, shops. But it is kind of like a small town, and that people are very friendly, and you don't have those big chains, and you can really, like, make an impact. You can, like, I don't know. It's just super fun. And the way I like to sum it up in terms of why I live here, and I do, I live right downtown. I haven't driven to work in 10 years. I got rid of my car completely 2 years ago. It is possible in the Motor City. But it's because Detroit's big enough to matter in the world, right? Like, everybody know Detroit. In China, they know Detroit. They might not even know Chicago, but sometimes, but they'll know Detroit. But at the same time, you can have a positive impact. So big enough to matter in the world, small enough where you can matter in it. That's what I like to say.
Okay, that's great. And I guess you could always pop over to Canada, too, if you want.
That is true. I mean, that's a definite, like, I can walk to Canada. I mean, there's a little bus. There's actually the tunnel bus. You can jump on, and you'll be in Canada in, like, 2 minutes. It's 2,500 feet. Across the Detroit River to Canada, and you have Windsor, Ontario there. And it's due south, too. That's what's really funny. You go south to get to Canada. But you do need your passport or what they call, like, an enhanced driver's license. But also the casinos. Like, I'm not a big gambler, so I didn't really think of it. But we have three casinos right in downtown Detroit, and then a Caesar. We have MGM, Greektown, and Motor City Casino, with all the hotels and restaurants and shows that they put on as well. And then right across the river is Caesar's Windsor. So you have four casinos within just blocks of each other. And you can get two countries for the price of one.
So people who think they have too much money and want to get rid of it.
There you go.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming on and giving us this sitting tour.
Yeah, and if anyone ever has any questions, DIDetroit.org is our site. We're a nonprofit geared towards just making sure everyone gets the most out of Detroit, whether they're here a day or a lifetime. We do have self-guided tours on our website, free walking tours every Saturday at 2. You can use the People Mover if it rains too much. and lots of customized tours, too. So come explore Detroit.
So what is, and by the way, what charge for getting a tour?
Our walking tours are free every Saturday at 2 p.m.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then we have a bus tour every fourth Saturday, and that for the winter at least. In the summer, we do it every Saturday, and that's only $10. So we call it, and we have bar tours. Now, those are really fun. We actually take you in and introduce you to the owner and the bartender and the guy at the end of the corner, you know, at the bar who lives around the corner, and those are only $5. So we call them our practically free bar tours and practically free bus tours. And then the walking tours are 100% free.
Well, I appreciate you calling in and giving
thanks,
up this
thanks
info.
For having me.
And
okay, well,
I'll make this
let
show.
Us know your next time in
okay.
town.
I certainly will.
Thanks so much.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.
You too. Bye.
Yes. Hopefully, I don't know who's calling in. Let's. I don't know, but nonsense. Well, I was going to say who's calling in, but no one's calling in. They're calling my home, and I ain't going to answer the phone. but anyhow, well, I'm going to end this show early. Wednesday I have another show that I'll be doing this Wednesday, which is 2 days from now in case people are archiving or whatever, and more about this trip for the art and food trip that I took. So for now, everybody, the chickens, they're out of here. They, you know, I said, you know, take a rest. So for now, everybody, have a great day, evening. If you can, be kind to one another. Please. Okay. Now we just got to find. Here we are. Intro music. This is what happens when I put too much stuff on this music intro. There we go. Okay. Bye, everybody.